Good evening, friends. We will have a short talk for the next 20-25 minutes on the subject, are there miracles? Then we will have discussions on the subject, any questions you may have. But before proceeding to our talk, we will consider a short devotional reading relevant to the subject under consideration from the book Light on the Path. Knowledge is man's greatest inheritance. Why then should he not attempt to reach it by every possible road? The laboratory is not the only ground for experiment. Science, we must remember, is derived from science, present participle of scire, to know. Its origin is similar to that of the word discern, to ken. Science does not therefore deal only with matter. No, not even its subtlest and obscurest forms. Such an idea is born merely of the idle spirit of the age. Science is a word which covers all forms of knowledge. It is exceedingly interesting to hear what chemists discover and to see them finding their way through the densities of matter to its finer forms. But there are other kinds of knowledge than this, and it is not everyone who restricts his strictly scientific desire for knowledge to experiments which are capable of being tested by physical senses. Everyone who is not a dullard or a man stupefied by some predominant vice has guessed or even perhaps discovered with some certainty that there are subtleties lying within the physical senses. There is nothing at all extraordinary in this. If we took the trouble to call nature into the witness box, we should find that everything which is perceptible to the ordinary sight has something even more important than itself hidden within it. The microscope has opened a world to us, but within those encasements which the microscope reveals lies a mystery which no missionary can probe. The whole world is animated and lit down to its most material shapes by a world within it. This inner world is called astral by some people, and it is as good a word as any other, though it merely means starry. But the stars, as Locke pointed out, are luminous bodies which give light of themselves. This quality is characteristic of the life which lies within matter. For those who see it need no lamp to see it by. Are there miracles? That is the subject. Now, just note down a couple of definitions of the word miracle. A good point to start our discussion. Definition of the word. It says, a quote, an event not explicable by natural or scientific laws, may be attributed to a supernatural being, God or gods, a miracle worker, a saint, or a religious leader. Another one says, an event that appears inexplicable by the laws of nature and so is held to be supernatural in origin or an act of God. The question is, can something like this happen? If by miracle we mean that something beyond the working of natural law. Can something like that happen? That is the question. In order to consider this, we must keep in mind what a great Roman emperor who was very well versed in the Greek philosophy said. This king says to himself in his diary that he must always remember certain things. He must always keep in mind certain things. And what that is this. I quote, always remember these things. What the nature of the whole is. What my own nature is. The relation of this nature to that. What kind of part it is of what kind of whole. Unquote. These are the four things which Marcus Aurelius says we should always keep in mind. So for our discussion today, we should keep this in mind. The nature of the whole, the nature of the self, the relation between the self and the whole, or the part and the whole, and what this relationship is. That is what we must keep in mind to answer this question that Arjan Virat. So, firstly, examining the nature of the whole or nature itself, we have two options. Either we say that everything is by chance, accidental, chaos. That is one option that we have before us. Anything that happens, happens by chance, by accident. Or the other option is, we say that everything is governed by law or laws. There is no middle way. We cannot say that partly there is laws, there are laws working, and partly there is chaos. Absurd, doesn't make sense. Our own experience shows in common everyday experiences show that anything that happens, happens because of law. And by law we mean causes and effects. The revolution of the earth around the sun, rotation of the earth around its own axis, can discern laws in all this, which is what produces, which is what the phenomena that is produced is day and night. The birth of the body, the death of the body, its health as well as its the diseases. You can discern laws here, biological laws, chemical laws, the growth of the plant, the fruit that it bears, its relationship to the seasons. You can discern laws there. We are sitting here, we are stationary, not falling down on the ground. You can discern loss here. Anything that you take, you can discern loss. So whatever we understand, all our science, technology, its application, all based on identification of loss, study of its ramifications and its application. That's what science is. So, it is absurd to say that anything happens by chance, accident. Everything happens according to natural law. And to take it to a slightly abstract level, we cannot think of an effect without a cause. Very clear. So, the constant working of laws in nature is an established thing. It's illogical to say that there are no laws working in nature. But what do we, or how do we explain phenomena such as the video which was once shared over email, where there is a particular Swami, he has visited Bangalore also, my own family members have seen him. He sleeps on burning fire. He just wears a simple ochre robe, sleeps on it, and the raging fire. He sleeps on it and keeps moving his hand and the fire keeps growing It's as if he's playing with the fire. And after a long time, 15, 20 minutes, he gets up and nothing has happened to him. How do we explain this? Various such phenomena comes to mind. Another thing is, my own father had visited a certain gathering, religious gathering, to which he was invited. And he said that there was this lady belonging to that particular religious sect, and she was wearing a simple sari, doing some puja, and she just immediately, you know, out of thin air, she gave a big portrait of a particular deity. And my father was shocked to see, where did that come from? How did that happen? So how do we explain these things? That is, are these miracles? Now, what the modern science, the view that it takes is that either it doesn't explain this, or there are some sections which says that due to some accidental things, such things might happen, or usually it is discrediting such phenomena, not even investigating it, and calling them as frauds. This is what the modern scientific view is, because the idea is that physical nature is the entirety. Nature is nothing but physical. Life is nothing but outcome of the physical activities. But what does ancient science say? Because if we don't consider what the ancient science says, we won't have solution to these riddles of life. Ancient science says that physical is only one aspect of nature. There are other hidden, subtle, more potent aspects in nature, different layers or aspects, so to say. And therefore, if you investigate only the physical aspect, it will be as if I want to investigate this table and I investigate only the color of the table, probe only the color of the table, and I ignore all other its characteristics like its density, its weight, its shape, and so on, and try to grasp the truth out of it, which doesn't make sense. Now, scientific skeptics may laugh at it, laugh at the proposition that there is something beyond physical universe at all. But what is modern science? It is a set of methodological rules it is an attempt to arrive at truth using these methodological ideas, methodological truths, rules. This reminds of one very brave and bold philosopher of science. He was a professor in California, Berkeley University. His name was Paul Feyerabend. He says that he rejected that the modern scientific method is the only way to reach the truth. He says that there are other methods also which must be included as science and not rejected as superstition or rejected as something not worthy for consideration. He says, I quote, "Science does not have a monopoly on truth, and its authoritarian status in society should be questioned," unquote. So ancient science says that there are other aspects in the universe. That is one thing we must keep in mind. And these hidden, invisible aspects of nature also have laws, just like the laws that we try to understand on the physical, chemical, biological laws that we probe and find in the physical material universe, Similarly, there are laws which govern the inner realms also. And one who knows these laws, one who is acquainted with these laws, one who knows how to operate them, can produce phenomena which appears miraculous. Which appears miraculous. But if we don't consider that there are other universes at all, which is evident given the various puzzles that nature throws at us, if we don't even consider it, it will be, as Krishna says in the Gita, it will be a knowledge which is of tamasic nature. He defines it as a knowledge which is attached to one object alone as if it were the whole. The scientific skepticism is of that kind. It will hold on to one object alone, which is the physical aspect of nature, and think that that is the whole. So he says it is of a dark nature. It does not lead to truth, it's tamasic. But can we call these other aspects of nature, the invisible, hidden aspects of nature, the psychic, the moral, mental aspects of corresponding to us in nature, can we call this supernatural? There is nothing known as supernatural actually. All that is natural also. Because we recognize only our physical, material nature, it appears supernatural. One who knows those laws, those powers, those faculties, and operates to them, it will be as natural as me lifting this pen or holding this book. He is using those senses and faculties. It is like this, a beautiful analogy is given in Secret Doctrine of a chariot. We hear the sound of a chariot moving. We are not seeing the chariot. Assume we are not seeing the chariot. Now, if we hear the sound of the chariot, then there must be a chariot. The sound is like the physical material universe. The sound that is being produced means that there is a chariot which is moving. Now the chariot is again not moving by itself, there is a driver. There are horses and a driver who is controlling the horses. These are the other inner hidden aspects of the universe. And the driver also is not driving according to his own whims and fancy. There is the owner of the chariot who is guiding the driver, who is asking him to go here or there. So that is what Krishna calls as Kshetrajna. There is Kshetra, which is the field of action, the material universe, as well as the other aspects of universe. Then there is Kshetrajna, who is the knower, the director, the vivifying agent. So unless we grasp both of these things, which actually is true knowledge, merely holding on to material will be hearing only the sound of the chariot, not knowing the chariot, it's the way it is, the driver and the owner of the chariot. So that's just an example, an analogy. Just like there are these various aspects of universe, various realms, similarly in man also there are various senses and faculties. And he is a perfect copy of the universe. What the universe is as a whole, as Marcus says, he used the word whole. The part or the self is a copy of that. Every human being, everything in the universe is a copy of the whole. Plotinus, the Neoplatonic philosopher, explains this very beautifully. He says, I quote, "This universe is a single living being embracing all living beings within it and possessing a single soul that permeates all its parts to the degree of their participation in it. Every part of this sensible universe is fully participant in its material aspect and in respect of soul in the degree to which it shares with the world soul. He is saying that the life that we find in the universe is one. So there is interconnectedness. And the material of the universe is one. So all the various life forms, intelligences that we see are aspects of one. And the same life that the same spirit, force, consciousness that is there in the sun is the same, it is from the same source that comes the life in us also. So there are various aspects of the universe beyond the physical. There are various aspects of man beyond his physical body. This is why, you know, he, Plotinus says that the soul of man is amphibian, he says. Amphibian. That is, it lives in both the worlds. The one is the world of the senses, the physical. And then there is the other world, the hidden inner world. Of course, this hidden inner world is again a generalization. That itself has various layers, aspects, degrees. So these subtler senses must be understood for us to explain or understand any of the so-called apparent miracles. In reality, there are no miracles. Everything that happens according to law alone. It may appear miraculous because we are unaware of the laws which are working there. Our knowledge is limited, but one who is performing these apparent miracles knows other set of laws and operating them. And in our ignorance, we think it is a miracle. And this existence of subtler senses and other higher possibilities in man is very poetically mentioned by Shakespeare in his work Hamlet. He describes man and says, "What a piece of work is a man! How noble in reason! How infinite in faculties! In form and moving, how express and admirable! In action, how like an angel! In apprehension, how like a god! The beauty of the world, the paragon of animals." He is God as well as animal. In the lowest aspect, the physical body is an animal. But not his real nature. He is a God, he is an angel. With infinite faculties. So just like physical vision, we are able to see at a certain distance. Similarly, if we use our inner faculties, for that inner faculties, the physical obstacle does not exist. Now we are getting the signal on our mobile phones, though there is physical obstacles everywhere. How? Because for electromagnetism, there are no for electromagnetic waves, physical obstacles doesn't exist. It passes through them. Similarly, just like an analogy, if we use our inner vision, we'll be able to see at a great distance. Beyond the physical,
past, present, future.
Yes, yes.
Past, present.
Yes, yes, yes. So not only is the physical, not only at a great distance as to what is happening now, let's say what is happening in far distant places. All that has happened in the past also can be known. The reason is this. Anything that happens have their record in nature. Nothing is ever lost. It impresses itself on the memory of nature. So one who knows how to read this book of nature can know all that has happened in anybody's life, any historical event. And the effect of the past and the present happenings is also reflected there. Because again, it is working of strict mathematical laws. Causes have been set in motion and will produce effects. The effect may fructify or bear fruit in the future. That's a different thing. But the effect is contained within the cause. So anything that anybody has done, group of people, nations together, all these various causes are there, and effect it produces whatever can be known, can be discerned by one who reads this book of nature. Similarly, you know, in Yoga Aphorisms of Patanjali, he describes so many various faculties that man can develop. Strange, appears strange and wonderful. One of the things he says is, by concentrating his mind upon the human body in its relation to air and space, the ascetic is able to change at will the polarity of his body and consequently acquires the power of freeing it from the control of the law of gravitation. Now, science says gravitation is a law. What the occultists or the ancient science says is, that is not the case actually, it is attraction and repulsion. Now, the table is residing stably on the floor because of the contrary polarities between the table and the floor, the ground. A person who knows how to change the polarity of this object can make it instantly levitate. Similarly, if he changes the polarity of his own body, he can shoot up like a bird into the sky. It appears miraculous, but it is actually the working of laws of nature which we may not be aware of. Now, this leads to the next point, which is the general tendency of the people when they see a person performing such miracles, the materialization of objects and various such strange things, to fall at his or her feet, make a god of that person, worship him and so on. Actually, that is not necessary at all. That is not necessary. You know, the Sufi saint writes a very short but insightful poem. His name is Abdullah Al-Ansari. He says this, I quote, "If you can walk on water, you are no better than a straw. If you can say air, you are no better than a fly. Conquer your heart so that you may become somebody." So it's a very short poem, but here he captures the very essence of the teachings of the real teachers of spiritual wisdom and their perspective about all this wonderful display of powers. They say that this is not what is required for man. What is required is spiritual wisdom. Spiritual wisdom. Saint Paul makes it very clear in his first epistle to Corinthians. He says this, I quote, "If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have no charity, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And if I should have prophecy and should know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I should have all faith so that I could remove mountains, and have no charity, I am nothing. And if I should distribute all my goods to feed the poor, and if I should deliver my body to be burned, and have no charity, it profits me nothing." Unquote. This is the perspective of the true teachers. It is not this development of sight, subtler faculties that are necessary, but acquirement of spiritual wisdom, because that alone can lead to the true aim of the soul. The purpose of man for which he has come here, acquired this body and going through this pilgrimage of life, can be accomplished only by spiritual wisdom. So actually they dissuade their students and those, any of them who would lend an ear to their teachings, from developing any such powers. That is not what is necessary. So to sum up, let us recollect what Marcus Aurelius said, the basic idea of what the nature of the whole is, what is my own nature, and what is the relationship of my own nature with this whole as it is. The nature of the whole is not merely physical. Physical is the most transitory, evanescent, perishable aspect of nature. In fact, all the philosophers disregard physical completely. There are other hidden aspects of nature, and the highest aspect of nature is the spirit. As Plato, or as Plotinus calls, what does he say? He says the world soul, the world soul, the nature of the whole. That is the source of all intelligence, force, power. Whatever we see activity is happening in the physical is a shadow, and the reality is deep within. And there are strict, mathematically precise laws which govern all this. That's the nature of the whole. The nature of the part or the nature of the self is a perfect copy of that. This physical body is the most transitory, illusionary aspect of us, not self at all. His self, as Plotinus says, is one with the world soul. And we are all here to ultimately realize that we are one with that. So we'll stop here by saying two things. One is what was already said, that the part has to realize its oneness with the whole. That is what it is we are here to achieve. The unit should realize, or the self should realize, that it is, there's only one self. And secondly, it is not these psychic powers which we ought to crave for, but spiritual discernment, viveka, buddhi. Development of that faculty in us is what has to be aimed for. And that is so beautifully brought in the life of one Sufi person. Her name was Rabaiya. Rabaiya al-Adwiya. She was a 10th century Sufi saint. Great soul. One day she was walking at the banks of the river. You'll hear this story and stop and take up any questions. So she is walking on the banks of the river and she finds another Sufi. His name is Hassan. So he wants to display that he has acquired these strange powers. Powers over the forces of nature. So what he does is he throws his prayer carpet on the river, sits on it, which is floating on the river, and says, "Rabaiya, come, let's pray." So Rabaiya looks at him and she realizes now she is simply, you know, displaying these powers is absolutely unnecessary. So she decides to teach him what is the true Sufi way. So she says, "Oh Hassan, what are you doing? You are displaying your spiritual acquirements in the bazaar of the world. If you are doing that at all, at least show me something which the common person like me cannot do." And what she does is she throws her carpet, prayer carpet, and it floats on the air. She jumps and sits there. come Hasan, let's pray here. She said. Now Hasan is not able to do that. Hasan is dumbstruck. So she says, Hasan, I did this to show you that we are not here to do all these party tricks. This is not what we are here for. Let us fulfill the purpose for which we are here. And the purpose is this. As we saw, the part or the unit should realize that it is indissolubly linked with the whole. So let's stop here and take a simple question.